Let's recite the opening homage on page 1. I prostrate to the one who teaches that whatever is dependently arisen does not arise, does not cease, is not permanent, is not extinct, does not come, does not go, and is neither one thing nor different things. I prostrate the perfect Buddha, the supreme of all who speak, who completely dissolves all fabrications and teaches peace.
Tantalam. Ravji Dumba. Ravji Dumba Duzeta Bala Doin Deram Kigi. Tantin Duzin Duma Sedam. Kanatu. Shirajin Shirma Dutam and Mixeishis of Mamaya.
Chapter 7, beginning on page 49, is an examination of the composite. And it's an explanation of the passage in the sutras where the Buddha taught, considering the composite, the non-composite, positive actions and negative ones, when we examine them with precise knowledge, we find not the slightest trace of their existence. And the reason why Nagarjuna composed this chapter was that those who believe that things truly exist asserted that composite things exist because their defining characteristics, namely the activities of arising, abiding, and ceasing, truly occur. And so Nagarjuna in this chapter examines these three processes of arising, abiding, and ceasing. In this chapter, in the Sun of Wisdom, there are two verses quoted from this chapter. The first one is at the bottom of page 50. Arising, abiding, and ceasing do not exist, and therefore there are no composite things. Since composite things are utterly non-existent, how could anything non-composite
exists?
If we put this verse into the form of a logical reasoning, we would say, given composite phenomena, composite things, they do not truly exist because there is no arising, abiding, or ceasing. We looked earlier at the reasons why there is no arising, why arising does not truly occur. And once you know that, then it's easy to understand that there's no abiding, because if there's no arising in the first place, there can't be anything that abides, and there can't be any cessation either. And once you know that there is nothing composite, Then you also know that there can be nothing non-composite either. And if we put this into the form of a logical reasoning, we would say, given non-composite phenomena, they do not truly exist because composite phenomena do not truly exist. And this is a valid reason because the reference point for a non-composite phenomenon is a composite phenomenon. If you take away the reference point, then non-composite has nothing to depend on for its existence, so it can't be there either. When we examine with precise knowledge that searches for the true nature of reality, we find no arising, no abiding, and no ceasing. But this does not negate the appearance of arising, abiding, and ceasing in relative reality. These do appear, and therefore their status or the quality of their existence in relative reality is that they are dependently arisen, mere appearances. And in the next verse that's quoted on page 52, Nagarjuna gives the examples of how it could be that something appears and is a dependently arisen mere appearance while at the same time lacking any inherent nature or true existence. So what are examples of that? Like a dream, like an illusion, like a city of Gandharvas. That's how birth and that's how living, that's how dying are taught to be. Here Nagarjuna teaches that the quality of the relative appearances of arising, abiding, and ceasing is just like the quality of these appearances in dreams, in illusions, in cities of Gandharvas. Let's recite this verse at the bottom of page 50. Arising, abiding, and ceasing do not exist, and therefore there are no composite things, since composite things are utterly non-existent. How could anything non-composite exist? Let's sing this verse. Like a dream, like an illusion, like a city of Gandharvas. That's our birth and that's our living, that's our dying are taught to be. When you meditate in the samadhi that sees everything to be like an illusion, then singing this verse will help you a lot.
Mm-hmm. kanga sepa po memek pa tela leja memek pa memek pa memek sokhi so sungpa tong rekwetra pari rabzi jen rete duze jichu le le da sepa po yopi jumse jen duze jiri jichu rangin jitra pari baka kuchye do tene le da sepa po leta kone
Chapter 8 is an examination of actors and actions. And it's an explanation of the passage in the sutras of the mother, the sutras of the great mother Prajnaparamita, where the Buddha taught, no actor is perceptible and no action is perceptible either. And the reason why Nagarjuna wrote this chapter is that those who thought things truly exist, said to him that composite phenomena do actually exist because the causes of phenomena are actors and the actions that they take making these composite phenomena. And therefore, since these causes, actors and actions, exist, the results, composite phenomena, must also exist. And that's why in this chapter, Nagarjuna examines actors and actions.
It on that day, lay down, sepa po dan, lay down, giji madruki, sepa po yimba, lay la tukuba kanje, lay down, sepa pola, tunutropa madoba, drusiji require, jumping in the medical.
And when Nagarjuna examines actors and actions, he finds that the only way an actor can exist is if there's an action, and the only way an action can depend on the first one, and there's no other reason, there's no truly existent reason why they exist. The only reason they exist is in mutual dependence. If you could have an action that existed independently without having to depend on an actor, then it would truly exist. And if you could have an actor who could exist without an action, independently of there being an action or not, then that actor would truly exist. But it's not like that. For there to be an action, there must be an actor. But for there to be an actor, there must be an action. Since they have to depend on each other to exist, they do not truly exist. They can't. What dependent existence proves is that two things that are independent, this relationship of dependent existence, do not truly exist. At the same time, dependent existence implies appearance. And so things can appear in relative reality in an unimpeded way as dependently existent mere appearances.
This is Namalarebe Tanda Koa Madhuba Tempakaso Omayanta Padi Jebale. Come from Tenda Yoverse Duni Madhuki. Jimmy Linji Jebame, later late in Nami Nisumata, Negative.
Milarepa comes to the same conclusion that Nagarjuna does in this chapter about actors and actions, karmic actors and actions and their results. We can see that very clearly from his song, An Authentic Portrait of the Middle Way, when he sings, all animate and inanimate, the three realms are unborn and non-existent from the outset. No base to rest on, do not co-emerge. There is no karmic act, no maturation. That's the same point that Nagarjuna is making here.
Leda seba boya mata maje to ngon deni leda seba bo dembar yu leda seba bo yu dan dan chiji ji kira pite na leda seba bo nika maro deni ne long ta to le yemi ji tue ba len de tena uji.
From the perspective of no analysis, actors and actions and their results exist. From the perspective of analysis into the true nature of reality, they don't exist. And from the perspective of thorough analysis, the nature of actors and the actions they take transcends all concepts whatsoever. This is what we have to keep clear, these three stages of analysis.
Sebo lela ten si jen le jan sebo ten yin kene joan ma do dupe jone ma do.
Let's recite this verse at the top of page 57. An actor exists in dependence upon an action. An action exists in dependence upon an actor. And apart from that, no reason for their existence can be seen.
Ta goba ngaru le neba tapale. Ka ngaru le neba tapale ndo yinde de simchi mina so jam yinde. Chunde tane boba chuchinda. Joma tawa namka londa de. Chuyi dawanda ki mikinda aishikamari.
Chapter 9 is an examination of what comes first. And it's an explanation of these two passages from the sutras on page 59. The more important of them is the second, which reads, sentient beings do not exist, so no life force can be found either. These phenomena are like bubbles of foam, and banana trees, like illusions, like lightning in the sky, like water moons, like mirages. This verse is the Buddha's very own speech. If you recite it a lot, that would be very good. The reason why Nagarjuna composed this chapter was that from among the 18 different sub-schools of the Shravakayana, five of them asserted that there was a substantially existent self. And Nagarjuna wanted to show why that was in fact incorrect. And that's what he does in this chapter. The idea is that one has all of these different experiences of sense perceptions. The eye perceives form, the ears perceive sounds, the nose smells odors, the tongue tastes, the body experiences tactile sensations. And the idea of a substantially existent self is that there is an experiencer of all of these events who exists before the experiences themselves, independent of the experiences themselves, and then goes out and has all of these different experiences. If that's how it really was, then there would in fact be a substantially existent self. And one of the root verses from this chapter reads on page 60, the one who experiences perceptions does not exist before, during, or after the experiences of seeing and so forth. Knowing this, all thoughts of an experiencer of perceptions either existing or not existing are reversed. If it were the case that before the experiences of seeing forms and hearing sounds and so forth, the self who had those experiences existed, then what would be the logical flaw in that? Well, if it were one self, then when you were seeing any one particular form, you'd also have to be having all of the other experiences that you were going to have in the rest of your life. Because the experiencer of those experiences would exist. And if the experiencer exists, the experiences have to exist too. Otherwise, there's no reason for there to be an experiencer. And if it were a different self who had all of those different experiences, one self per experience, then in one individual, for every single experience you had, you'd have a different self. And that just wouldn't make sense. Well, somebody might say, there is a self who exists and substantially exists, but it's just inexpressible what that self is. You can't say it's one. You can't say it's many. And that's called the view of the inexpressible self. Some schools actually believe that. Another way to see the flaw in this idea of this self who exists independent of experiences is that if it's the same self who first exists before the experience and then has the experience and then exists after the experience, then that self is permanent. But on the other hand, if it's not the same self, then the self who has the experience, as soon as the experience is over, goes out of existence, replaced by a different self after the experience is over. And so you died, basically. You became extinct, and then you were born again with a totally new self. So if you believe that the self who has experiences substantially exists, either you fall into the extreme of permanence or the extreme of extinction. In fact, this way that the Shravaka schools, these five schools, asserted the existence of a substantially existent self is just the way that we think about it, that ordinary people think about it in the world, is to think that there is that I exist And then I go out and have all my experiences of seeing and hearing and everything. And then after those experiences are over, I still exist. So the experiencer exists before, during, and after the experiences. That's exactly how worldly people think. And this permeates the entire way that an ordinary person relates to the concept of self. They think, once I was a little child, and now I'm at the point of death. And they think that this self is the exact same before, in the middle, and after. So when we put all of this together, the analysis and the worldly appearance, what we find is that there is no self that truly exists. There is no experiencer who truly exists, who then goes out and has the experiences. But there is an experiencer who appears as a dependently arisen mere appearance. Let's recite this verse together. On page 60. The one who experiences perceptions does not exist before, during, or after the experiences of seeing and so forth. Knowing this, all thoughts of an experiencer of perceptions either existing or not existing are reversed.
Tene Raji Choba made them bukhinta bare Tetar Sukhin Tang Sutinta Lakwe Sovan Dusun Divai.
Chapter 10 is an examination of fire and firewood, and it's an explanation of these verses from the sutras on page 65. Let's recite them together. When one's hands, two sticks, and one's effort of rubbing the sticks come together, from these conditions fire arises, and after arising and performing its function, it quickly ceases. But when the wise ones ask, where did it come from and where did it go? They look in all directions, but never find any occurrence of its coming or going. So it is with the aggregates, sources of consciousness, and potentials. They do not exist inside, and they do not exist outside. All are free of self-entity, and they do not abide anywhere. The defining characteristic of phenomena is that they are of the essence of space.
Lapan dosi ki trat darbe me bhajin kevar chona yam me te kangni yam mayon sin kangdo yam doa me ba tende na zanye ba te gindo chutan pumbu kanda chenji la sobe chutan ke te gindo tende te doon le de ba tende na zanye.
The example given here is the example when you rub sticks together and make a fire appears, but that fire didn't come from anywhere, and it doesn't go anywhere when it goes out. So if it didn't come from anywhere, and it doesn't go anywhere, it can't really be here now. It's just a dependently arisen mere appearance. And that's how it is with all phenomena, all of the aggregates, sources of consciousness, elements, potentials. They don't come from anywhere, they don't go anywhere, they're just dependently arisen mere appearances. Let's recite the root verses from this chapter together, beginning on 66 and then 67 and 68.
If something exists in dependence upon something else, but that thing upon which it depends depend upon it, then which one of these exists in dependence upon which the fire would itself? Fire, there is no fire that exists apart from the firewood. The fire does not possess the fire. The fire does not support the firewood. And the firewood does not support the fire. This examination of fire and firewood refutes the self and the aggregates it appropriates. Similarly, examining vases, blankets, and so forth, it is perfectly explained that none of them exist in any of these five ways.
Now put an authentic portrait of the middle way to song. It's on page 205.
From the standpoint of the truth that's genuine, there are no ghosts, there are not even Buddhas. No meditator and no meditated. No paths and levels traveled and no suns. And no fruition bodies and no wisdoms. And therefore there is no nirvana there. Just designations using names and statements, all animate in animate the three realms. Unborn and non-existent from the outset, no base to rest on, do not co-emerge. There is no karmic act, no maturation. So even the name samsara does not exist. That's the way these are in the final picture. But oh, if sentient beings did not exist, what would the Buddhas of three times all come from? Since fruition with no cause impossible. So the standpoint of the truth that's superficial is samsara's wheel, nirvana past all grief. It all exists, that is the sage's teaching. Then what exists appearing to be things? And the non-existence reality that's empty, are essentially inseparable one taste. And therefore there is neither self-awareness nor awareness of what's other anywhere. All of this a union vast and spacious, and all those skilled in realizing this do not see consciousness, they see pure wisdom. Do not see sentient beings, they see Buddhas. Don't see phenomena, they see their essence. And out of this compassion just emerges powers, fearlessness, and all the qualities embodied by a Buddha. Just come as if you had a wishing jewel. This is what I, the yogi, have realized.
Tachukipa. Rabzi chukye pa khova ta pare, khova ta pin doi lese che sen le. Mun jen tam ma mek, semen tam ma mek, u ma mek so. Songpa teni, dene, gombolo rupje rikweta pare. Rabzi jen lese, khova yebe, yebe, yebe sena, khova yebe jen sen je, khova buddha yebe ndo pa gagpa che do. Nene tandan kovala tak repeta kiro.
Chapter 11 is an examination of samsara. Starts on page 71. And it's an explanation of the lines in the Prajnaparamita Sutras where the Buddha taught no beginning is perceptible, no end is perceptible, and nothing in between is perceptible either. And the reason why Nagarjuna wrote this chapter was to refute the idea which said that since samsara exists, there must be a self to wander around in samsara. In order to refute that notion, Nagarjuna examines the existence of samsara.
Tena doti lonte kova tomanta mamebe. Toman tai tombare ta toma mambe ta mame be sende tombare toma dan ta mena ujang madobare tisena kovarin.
The meaning of this teaching that the Buddha gave, that's quoted here, is that when you look at samsara, you can't find any beginning. And since there's no beginning, actually, there can't be an end. And if there's no beginning and there's no end, then there can't be anything in between. And that's why samsara doesn't truly exist. Those who believe things truly exist said that since samsara exists, then there must be a self to go around in samsara. And that's exactly right. If the cycle of samsaric existence exists, then if that truly exists, then there must be someone to cycle around in it. If the cycle exists, there has to be a cyclist. But, in fact, samsara does not truly exist, and therefore neither does any self to go around in it. There's only one verse from this chapter quoted in the Sun of Wisdom on page 73. Since one cannot happen before the others, and they cannot happen simultaneously, why would you ever think that birth, aging, and death truly exist? If samsara exists, then birth, aging, and death have to exist, because that's what samsara is made of, is this cycle of being born, aging, and dying again and again. But when you examine them, then you find that they can't truly occur sequentially, nor can they happen at the same time. And therefore, they don't truly exist, because there's no other possibility. And that's why samsara doesn't truly exist. It's easy to see why they can't happen simultaneously, because birth and death are opposite events. So a person isn't born and die at the same moment. The way we normally think that they happen is that they occur sequentially. First you're born, and then you live and get old, and then you die. But if you look at that and see if that, try to find out if that truly happens, it can't. Because if birth really happened before death, then that would mean that you'd have to be born before there was ever any death in your past lifetime. And so your birth in this lifetime would have no cause. And if you died before you were born, then also your death would have no cause, because you were never born in the first place. So they can't happen sequentially either. If you don't believe in past and future lives, then you don't believe in samsara in the first place. Because you're born, and then you live, and then you die, and that's the end. There's nothing more than that. So where is samsara? There's no going around in samsara. So then you don't keep going around and around.
Finished.
But the Buddhist tradition asserts samsara as an endless string of lifetimes that actually had no beginning. You can never find the first one. And therefore, it makes, from that perspective, it makes no sense that birth could precede death, because if it did, you'd be born in this life before you died in the last life. And the idea that aging and death occur before birth is easy to refute, because you'd get old and die before you were born. And that's why, when you examine birth and death, you find that they don't truly exist, that they just appear, and these appearances are dependently arisen, mere appearances. And that's why, even though it's the case that the general Buddhist explanation is that samsara is this cycle or this string of lives that has no beginning and no end, when you investigate that, you find it doesn't truly exist. And that, in the 16 emptinesses, is called the emptiness of that which has neither beginning nor end. The emptiness of samsara and the endless cycle of samsaric birth and death is the emptiness of that which has neither beginning nor end. Doesn't truly exist. And so when we examine samsara, then this cycle of lifetimes without beginning and end does not truly exist. Nor is it the case that you could just have some samsara that sort of spontaneously arose, or an existence that spontaneously arose out of nothing. That would be of the nature of emptiness too.
Tanya kapsom jana mata mache pe ngo kovaran hi jitopatana. Kira jitta jin che na kova mado. Nelong thatola kova yoba meba laso batuba thamjele deba.
And so connecting this with the three stages, from the perspective of no analysis into the genuine nature of reality, it seems like samsara exists. From the perspective of slight analysis, then when we analyze its true nature with our intelligence, we find that it doesn't truly exist. And from the perspective of thorough analysis, we see that the true nature of samsara is beyond the ideas of existence and non-existence and any other idea we might have about what it might be. When we don't analyze, this planet has a top and a bottom. When we do analyze, we find that this planet is empty of top and bottom. And from the perspective of thorough analysis, this planet and its top and bottom are beyond all concept of what they might be. From the perspective of no analysis, there is time. From the perspective of slight analysis, there is no time. You can't answer the question what time it is, really. And from the perspective of thorough analysis, time transcends all conceptual fabrications.
Da razi choni ba dongan ta pare dongan ta ba la do yin de de che chen le do ngar ba ya do ngar be tung on la so ba che che so re che re che to ba razi jin de da yo de dongan ye be se dongan ye be jin chen je da ye ba de ba re ka se dongan ra gin je to na da go do dongan ni wa ba da go
Chapter 12 is an examination of suffering. And it's an explanation of the line in the Prajnaparamita Sutras where the Buddha taught suffering is empty of suffering. And the reason why Nagarjuna wrote this chapter is that some people said to him, I exist because I'm in pain. They said, because suffering exists, then the self exists. And that's true. If suffering did truly exist, there would have to be someone to experience it. And so Nagarjuna had to examine suffering and demonstrate that it doesn't truly exist after all. And the verse quoted from this chapter is on page 79. That which is only suffering does not arise from any of the four extremes, and not only that, all outer phenomena do not arise from any of the four extremes either. So suffering doesn't come from itself or something other than itself or both itself and something other than itself or from without any cause at all. And so since there's no other possibility, suffering doesn't truly come into existence. And that's how it is with all things. They don't come from any of these four possibilities, so they don't truly arise. They are just mere appearances that appear to arise, but don't truly arise, just like appearances in dreams, just like water moons. Chapter 13 is an examination of the precise nature of reality. And it is an examination of the statements that the Buddha made when he gave the Shravakayana teachings about how it is that genuine reality or ultimate truth is true and relative truth or superficial truth is false, distinguishing the character of the two truths in this way. Nagarjuna examines the two truths in this chapter and shows that it's not like that, that both relative and ultimate, both apparent and genuine reality, are equally empty of any inherent nature. There's no difference in the quality of how they appear or how they exist or how they are empty. So genuine reality is not true. Relative reality is not truly false. And there's one verse quoted from this chapter on page 86. If there were the slightest thing not empty, there would be that much emptiness existent. Since, however, there is not the slightest thing not empty, how could emptiness exist?
Madonba chunze chan chik, yuna tongba yan chunze chik yungre telitipa. Madonba chunze chik madopa kondechi chutam chik tongba yinbe sena, madonba chunze mebe sena, tongba yan chunze chik madopa. Tisena, tene tong madonchi tibetata tabarata tuk.
If you could actually find something that is not empty, Nagarjuna says, then there could be that much emptiness. But when you examine samsara and nirvana, you can't find anything that is not empty. You can't find anything that truly exists. If there's nothing that's not empty, how could there be any emptiness? Because emptiness has no reference point. And so the true nature of reality is beyond these conceptual fabrications of empty and not empty. When we investigate with our prajna at the level of slight analysis, just a little bit, then we start making these distinctions between emptiness and not emptiness and all of that. But from the perspective of thorough analysis, there's no distinction at all, because the true nature of reality is beyond all conceptual fabrications. You can project not empty or you can project empty, but they're both just conceptual projections. The true nature of reality transcends them both equally. Let's recite this verse together. If there were the slightest thing not empty, there would be that much emptiness existent. Since, however, there is not the slightest thing not empty, how could emptiness exist? Let's now recite the 16 emptinesses and the 4 summarizing emptinesses from the text by Chandrakirti called Entering the Middle Way. This starts on page
197.
If we read the 16 emptinesses because they're easy to understand, then when it's time to ask questions, the questions will also go quite easily. From the perspective of emptiness itself, there are no divisions or distinctions. So there aren't 16 or any other number of emptinesses from the perspective of emptiness. But from the perspective of all the relative phenomena there are, then there are a limitless number of emptinesses, because you can have one emptiness for every phenomenon, the emptiness of this and that. So from among all of these limitless number of emptinesses, the Buddha picked the top 16 that we have the most clinging to as sentient beings, and that's how there are 16 emptinesses. And then he summarized these top 16 into 4, and then you get the 4 summarizing, 20 in all. And the one we have the most clinging to, the Buddha put first, because it's our own eyes and ears, everything that comprises our own body. That's what we have the most clinging to. And the emptiness of all of that is the emptiness of the inner. Then number 2 on the hit list is the outer things. That's the next
thing we have the strongest clinging to is outer objects. And so the Buddha taught the emptiness of that, the emptiness of the outer. And so that's how this list goes.
Sin selflessness is what liberates beings, the Buddha taught to touch the selflessness of individuals and of phenomena. Then in order to better help those to be tamed, the teacher taught further classifications in the extensive explanation of emptiness. There are 16 classifications in the concise explanation. The Buddha summarized these into 4, and these are explained. The teachings of the Mahayana, since it has no inherent nature, the eye is empty of the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, are all described as being the same. They do not remain, they do not cease. Therefore, the eye and the rest, the 6 inner ones, are things that have no inherent nature at all. This is the emptiness of the inner. Since their nature is emptiness, forms are empty of form, sound, smells, taste, tactile sensations, are exactly the same. Forms and so forth have no inherent nature. This is the emptiness of the outer, that both have no inherent nature, is the emptiness of the outer and inner phenomena have no inherent nature. The wise ones call this emptiness. It is asserted that this emptiness as well is empty of the the emptiness of what is called emptiness is the emptiness of emptiness. The Buddha taught it to counteract the clinging of the mind that thinks emptiness is a thing, since they pervade everything without exception. Whole universe, and since the immeasurables are an example of their infinitude, the direction given the name vast, all these 10 directions, emptiness is the emptiness of the vast. In order to reverse our clinging to the vast as being real, nirvana is the supreme goal, and therefore genuine reality, nirvana is empty of itself, and this is the emptiness of genuine reality. That nirvana is a thing, the knower of genuine reality taught the emptiness of genuine reality. Because they arise from conditions, the 3 realms are composite, it is taught they are empty of themselves. Buddha stated is the emptiness of the composite when arising, abiding, and cessation, not among its characteristics, a phenomenon is non-composite. And this is the emptiness of the non-composite, that to which extremes do not apply is expressed as being beyond extremes. of its very self is explained to be the emptiness of that which is beyond extreme, since it has no point when it began. When it will end, samsara is called that which has neither beginning nor end, since it is free from coming and going. Like a dream, samsaric existence is void of that which has neither beginning nor end. It was definitively taught in Nagarjuna's fundamental wisdom of the middle way. Means to throw it away or to get rid of it. What should not be abandoned is what one should never cast away from oneself, the Mahayana. What should not be abandoned is empty of its very self, since this emptiness nature, it is called the emptiness of what should not be abandoned, the very essence of the compound. And everything else was not created by the students, the solitary Buddha, Bodhisattvas, or even the Tathagatas. Therefore, this essence of the composite and so is explained to be the true nature of phenomena. It itself is empty of itself. This is the emptiness of the true nature, the 18 potentials, the 6 types of contact, and from those 6, the 6 types of feeling, all that has form and all that does not, the composite and the non-composite. These compose all phenomena, all of these phenomena are void of themselves. Of all phenomena, the non-existence of entities such as suitable to be form and so is the emptiness of defining characteristics. Composite and non-composite phenomena have their own individual defining characteristics. Are all empty of themselves, and this is the emptiness of defining characteristics. The present does not abide the past. Future do not exist. Wherever you look, you do not see them. So the 3 times are called imperceptible. The imperceptible is empty of its own essence. It does not remain. It does not cease. This is the emptiness of the imperceptible. Since things arise from causes and conditions, they are mere collections that have no essence. This non-existence of collection, empty of itself, and this is the emptiness of an essence in the non-existence of things. In short, everything included in the 5 aggregates, these are empty of themselves, and this is the emptiness of things. Absences of things are all non-composite phenomena. Absences of things are empty of themselves, and this is the empty of the absences of things. Phenomena's true nature itself has no essence. Of the true nature, it is called true nature because no one created it, whether or not Buddhas appear in the natural emptiness of all entities is proclaimed to be the other entity. genuine reality's ultimate limit and suchness, these are the emptiness of the other entity. These 20 emptinesses were taught extensively in the sutras of transcendent wisdom.
The way to meditate according to the Middle Way Consequence School is explained as follows. The object of meditation, Dharma Dhatu, and the meditating mind are undifferentiable, like water poured into water. The way to arrive at this is first to see that Dharma Dhatu, the true nature of reality, is beyond conceptual fabrication, that it isn't existent, nor non-existent, nor both, nor neither. It's beyond all conceptual fabrication. When we realize that, then we stop fabricating concepts. We stop projecting conceptual imputations onto the true nature of reality. And so, Dharma Dhatu is beyond concept. The mind is not fabricating concepts. It too is beyond concept. They are undifferentiable, like water poured into water. It is explained in the Guide to the Bodhisattva's Conduct by the Bodhisattva Shantideva in the following way. At the time when there is neither something nor nothing, to occupy a place before the mind, there is no other projected image. This lack of reference point is perfect peace. All conceptual fabrications, all reference points dissolve. And this is perfect peace. Milarepa sings in the Song of the Profound Definitive Meaning sung on the Snowy Range. For the mind that masters view, the emptiness dawns. In the content seen, not even an atom exists. A seer and seen refined until they're gone. This way of realizing view, it works quite well. Transcending there being anything to see and anyone to see anything. This is the true nature of reality, beyond seer and seen. That's how it's explained in the Consequence School.
tere tamba chagyang kula gona la song go ma ro le po na thambe se jun du se na nyin dan se de se na te ben thong a me da nga ma do so te ngo to so te te me sa te chin du lo ju ngo de
chakya chambo to lo
ya.
Today we sang the songs that Milarepa sang to the teacher Shakya Guna. And in those songs, Milarepa gives the teacher Shakya Guna the following pointing out instruction. When you realize this, whatever appears is mind. Throughout the day and night, look at your mind. When you look at your mind, you don't see anything. When you don't see anything, let go and relax. That is Mahamudra pointing out instruction. And it's a pointing out instruction in harmony with the second turning of the wheel of Dharma.
Dhani
chula chupashu, dhani shindam chupashu. May we live long and be free of illness, enjoy freedom, great resources and happiness. Next life may we meet in the pure realm. May we always practice Dharma and benefits being. Tomorrow, in the afternoon session, we'll make time for questions. You can see what questions you have about this material, and also if you have any questions about the songs that we're singing of Milarepa, then you can also ask about them. Mainly about the fundamental wisdom of the middle way. That should be the main thing you look at and see if you have questions about.
Yeah.